Welcome to episode 155 of Home Ice Advantage. I am, of course, your host, Colin. We are getting ever so closer to the start of the Carolina Hurricanes preseason, and then eventually the regular season, and then all things according to plan, the NHL playoffs. I realize I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but I know a lot of fans, and years in the past, I've been guilty of this, of once our season's over, you're done. That's the end of the season. I'll come back in October. I'll see you then. And, as one of those former fans, I know how hard it is to then jump back in and try to pick up everything you missed in the offseason, because things still happen. So the whole point of today's episode is just to recap what has happened in the 2023 NHL offseasons in regard to the Carolina Hurricanes. Without further ado, roll the thing.
9,393 days of frustration, and on the 9,394th day of NHL existence, the Carolina Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
Welcome to Home Ice Advantage, with historical perspectives, modern-day deep dives, special guests, and a healthy mix of good, bad, and or hot takes. This is the best place for you to learn about your Carolina home games.
I just want to say thank you, and I'm looking forward to this challenge. It's an honor, and I think we're going to do great things.
Before we actually dive into the offseason, I want to talk about that final few moments in Florida when the Hurricanes were eliminated from the Eastern Conference Finals. And I just want to talk about the moment that the season ended for the Hurricanes, because I don't think it was within the final 5 seconds of Game 4 in Sunrise. But I'll get to it.
Now Reinhardt with it. Down to 10 seconds.
So that is the final goal of the series, May 24th, 2023. I can tell you it was May 24th because that just happens to be my wedding anniversary. So instead of having a nice anniversary, my husband had to deal with a stressful grouch all day. And then after that goal, a resentful, bitter grouch for the rest of the night and for several days after, even though, and this is where I'll make my argument, we kind of knew it was coming to an end. We always had hope. Don't get me wrong. We always had hope. But the real moment that the series came to an end was in Raleigh, well past midnight, with just seconds left. Yeah, again, with just seconds left. But this time, with just seconds left in quadruple overtime, when the very same Florida forward took Game 1 in heartbreaking fashion, if you're a Hurricanes fan.
Brent Burns in his own zone. Slavin can't punch it. Scores! Matthew Tkachuk puts it to bed, and Florida has won the opening game of the Eastern Conference Final.
Now, of course, anything can happen in sports. That's what makes it beautiful. And if you go back and listen to my immediate reaction, which the episode I did that night is my most downloaded episode by far, and I've never heard it, and I'll never go back and listen to it because I'm so afraid that it's terrible. But if you go back, I'm sure I was talking about how anything's possible and the Hurricanes can come back and win and blah, 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 blah. But in honesty and in hindsight, with my glasses on, I can tell you that Kotkaniemi, when Kotkaniemi came off the ice and slammed his stick into, I don't remember if it was the wall or not, but let's go with it was a wall. He slammed his stick into the wall after they lost. That frustration stayed in that series. And I'm not going to go too deep into this, but also I am. That frustration stayed with him for the rest of the series. And it kind of went into when Rod said, you know, it's going to go down in history. It will be recorded as a sweep. But this wasn't a sweep. And what Rod was saying there is that all of those games were extremely close. One bounce here, one bounce there. That's the difference. And it's very similar to when the Rangers eliminated them, excluding Game 7. So what needs to change? Going into the offseason, what needs to change? What do we know that needs to change? And the most obvious answer, and I actually wrote about it on CanesHomeIce.com, that the easy answer was we need a pure goal scorer. a bunch of people have been saying it forever, and at times they just should shut up about it because it's not related to the moment. They'll be like, hey, the penalty kill isn't working because we don't have a pure goal scorer. And it's like, the two aren't correlated, so no. But it would be nice if that's what Carolina got, and that's basically the prescription Hurricanes fans wrote after being eliminated. After the sweep, it was, well, they need a pure goal scorer. And we'll enter the offseason now. So very early on, and I mean incredibly early on into the offseason, Brett Pesce fires his agent and hires a new one. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know why. Brett Pesce and everyone that has 1 year remaining on their deals, which includes Jalen Chatfield and Brady Shea on the blue line, and Brett Pesce, of course, and Tero Vinen up front. All of those guys were going to start talking to the team about extensions if they wanted to stay and stuff like that this offseason, not next offseason when their contract's actually coming up, because the Hurricanes like to get their homework done early. And Brett Pesce, after seeing what has gone down with players like Dougie Hamilton, knows that the Hurricanes are not an easy organization to negotiate with. So he decides that he wants to upgrade his agent to someone maybe a little bit more cutthroat, maybe someone who can get him a few more gold coins in his bag. And rumors start flying around very early that Brett Pesce is on the trading block, that if Brett Pesce doesn't sign, or I should say sign an extension with the Hurricanes prior to the start of the regular season, that he would be traded. There was a whole bunch of timelines on that. It was before the draft. Oh, well, before the start of training camp, before the season. Honestly, looking at the 3,000 feet view of this, it has to be coming from the agent. It just has to be coming from his new agent. I don't mean that the guy isn't doing his job, that he's trying to turn the fans against Brett or turn the fans against the team. Nothing like that. This is just clearly this new agent's strategy to make it a public press spectacle of a negotiation, and, you know, to each their own. But when it came out that Carolina told Brett that if he didn't resign, he would be traded, I had two thoughts. One, that is absolutely the way Carolina works, but I'll get to why in a moment. Two, I cannot see the Hurricanes communicating that this early, which is why I think it had to have come from Brett's new agent. Because it is insanely early to give Brett Pesce that ultimatum. And the reason why I think it's something Carolina would definitely do is because they don't want to lose value. And I've talked about this throughout the offseason. I've written about it a couple of times. But the Hurricanes don't want to lose value on anyone. So if they have this, let's say, homegrown defenseman who can fit into basically every organization's top four, well, they're not just going to let him walk into free agency. They're going to try to trade him and get something, because I'll tell you what, a third or a fourth round pick, a second round pick, whatever they would end up getting, is a hell of a lot better than the squat they would get if he walked in free agency like Dougie Hamilton. And I think everyone with 1 year remaining on their current deal, which again, Brett Pesce, who we're talking about, Jalen Chatfield, Brady Shea, and Tero Vinen, all of them are in a similar boat that if Carolina decides that either they don't want to keep them, which I think could be true for one of these guys, but we'll see, and they just don't fit the system anymore, they're going to trade them to try to get some value rather than letting them walk. But say it's the player. Say it's an exact situation like Dougie, where they know they can get more on the open market. Carolina has their number. The player doesn't like the number. And they're going to go to the open market. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to end up leaving. Well, Carolina's learned that lesson, right? Hopefully, at least. They've learned that lesson that you don't want to let your star defenseman or forward or whoever leave in free agency. Imagine if they traded Dougie, what we could have gotten in return rather than letting him walk. I'm just saying, things could have been... We could have gotten more assets rather than the state of New Jersey collecting more income tax. And so I think anyone with 1 year left on the contract, any 1 year remainers, have a possibility of being traded. But I also don't think it's anything we need to panic about. It's nothing we need to keep top of mind 100% of the time. Think about it. Keep it in the back of your head, sure. But if you're thinking about who's going to be traded more than once a week, you drank the Kool-Aid, my friend. You have bought into the theories. You've mainlined media reports, which normally prove to be incorrect. And the way I know they prove to be incorrect is because the very next thing we're going to talk about is Jordan Staal staying on board for 4 more years. And it all started with a report days before the announcement of his extension that Jordan Staal and the Hurricanes had hit an impasse. And that it looked like Jordan Staal would not stay in Carolina. I know, it was an incredibly shocking report to hear. And, spoiler alert, even though I already mentioned it. Just a few days later, Jordan Staal would sign a 4-year extension with the Carolina Hurricanes with a $3 million annual salary.
It's where I wanted to be. I feel like we've got some unfinished business. And I'm just super excited to be part of this organization and this group of guys, and just everything about it just fit exactly what I wanted to finish off my career with. So I'm excited about it, and it can be a lot of fun and a lot of good future memories.
The idea that Jordan Staal would end his career anywhere else was just lunacy. But let's talk about the actual 4-year deal. Now, some of you might be like, wait, 4 years? Oh my God, how old is Jordan Staal? Is it going to be 1,000 by the time it ends? And the real answer is, in hockey years, yes, he'll be 38 when the contract expires. But the genius of this deal, I talked about it at the time, but it's possible you missed it or, you just don't remember. It's fine. Some of us don't have good memories. But the genius of this deal is that the NHL, or I guess really the CBA, has a 35-plus clause that if you sign someone 35 years old and they retire, that contract still affects your cap hit. But since Jordan Staal signed this contract at the age of 34, and this is how close we are, this episode will release on September 7th. 3 days later, September 10th, 2023, Jordan Staal will turn 35 years old. But since he signed it at the age of 34, and it's a 4-year contract extension, what this does is it gives Jordan Staal the opportunity to retire any day from now until the end of that 4-year contract, and there will be no penalty to the Carolina Hurricanes. He will just retire. He'll be gone, and we'll have to face that. But there will be no financial problems regarding our cap space. And really, honestly, what this contract is a sign of respect to the captain, to Jordan Staal himself, because what it does is it gives him that option. Okay, maybe at the end of this season you decide to hang him up. That's great. We wish you the best. Maybe you want to play 2 more years, 3 more years, whatever it is. But basically, if he retires before this contract ends, everything's copacetic. There will be no problems from it, and he gets to retire when he chooses to. He's not going to be forced into retirement because maybe he's a risky choice to re-sign that year. And that's incredibly awesome, and I love it in every single way. Eventually, and when you look at the ice time, Jordan Staal already plays fourth line minutes on some nights. But eventually, he will be that fourth line center guy. We won't be talking about who's going to center the fourth line. It will be Jordan Staal's line. No one tell Rod I was calling it the fourth line. But I'm so happy with this deal. I don't know of anyone who's like, wow, that's a terrible deal. It pays Jordan Staal a little bit more than I thought he would have received, but whatever. Because at the end of the day, it shows so much respect to the player, to the captain, to, by the time, depending when he retires, could be the longest serving player in Hurricanes history and the longest serving captain in franchise history. Although I think he's awfully close to that one. I'd have to check my numbers. Either way, it's a great contract. Everything's fine here. The next thing to bubble up to the surface after the signing of Tony, I'm sorry, after the extension of Jordan Staal is a report. Tony DeAngelo may make his way back to the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, if you don't pay attention to the Philadelphia Flyers, first of all, don't blame you. Garbage organization. And I literally mean like the talent on the ice is not good enough. So this initial report came out on June 24th that the Philadelphia Flyers and Carolina Hurricanes were in talks of trading DeAngelo back to Carolina. And it all came down to John Tortorella doesn't get along with Tony DeAngelo, which who would have seen that coming? And it just wasn't going to work out, though. He benched him, I don't even remember, a handful of games at the end of the season. He was just not a fan of good old TD or TDA, and that's the way it works sometimes. So the two sides come to an agreement, and they go to finalize the trade. They call the league office, and they're like, hey, guys, this is our trade call. We would like to go to launch or something. Please approve this. And the NHL is like, no. Okay, that makes it sound more dramatic than it really was. But basically, the NHL was like, you guys could be trying to circumvent the cap. And we can't just let you do that. So they decided that they were going to hold a meeting between Philly, Carolina, and the league just before the NHL entry draft. But really, the whole point of that meeting was to tell the two teams that they could not finalize the trade until at least the one-year anniversary of the deal that sent TDA to Philly from Carolina in the first place. Ultimately, there would be a ton of speculation about what would go down, and once the one-year anniversary came and passed, a bunch of people started speculating, because that's what we do in sports. So there was rumors that Philadelphia's ownership decided that the trade was just terrible and made them look bad, so they called it off, or that Carolina thought better of it and decided not to bring TDA back. Ultimately, we have no idea what took Carolina so long, but the Philadelphia Flyers would end up buying Tony DeAngelo out, and he would enter the free agency market yet again, honestly. And the crazy part about it to me is, so the last two times Tony DeAngelo has become a free agent, it's because he was bought out by his previous team. And the last two times the Carolina Hurricanes have signed him out of free agency. And I want to know if there's been any other time in NHL history that a player has been bought out twice and been signed by the same team out of free agency. I'm not good enough at checking the books to be able to find that out, but this has to be one of the very, very few times that has happened. But we'll get back to how much Tony signed for and everything later. But he would ultimately sign exactly 1 month after the report of the rumored trade came out. Now, and I'm not going to talk about it at the signing, because I don't feel like it's connected to TDA signing here, but the trade never happened. That initial trade where they called the league office and was like, hey, this is what we'd like to do. Please approve it. And the league said, no, you know, put this on ice, so you're going to have to wait. That trade never happened. We'll never know all the pieces. It was reported that it was a prospect and a, I think, seventh or sixth round pick for TDA. And that just didn't happen. So on August 9th, the Hurricanes do end up having a trade with the Philadelphia Flyers. They receive David Kasha, brother of Andre Kasha, who both play back in their home country. Like, David Kasha will never wear a Hurricanes uniform. It just won't happen. So this, I'm sorry, I should say that the Hurricanes then gave Philadelphia a fifth round in 2025 and center prospect Massimo Rizzo. I really hope I'm saying that right. And Rizzo does have a NHL upside. He is projected to make the NHL one day, but it's definitely a slower burn. And as always, nothing's guaranteed. And this trade honestly just seems like Carolina wanted to, hey, I know the league, you know, made this harder than it had to be, but here's the pieces we agreed on. No hard feelings. Please be a good trade partner in the future. And that's, there was no other reason they would have made this trade, because, again, David Kasha will not play in the NHL again. So, I don't know, guys. That was a weird one. Then the draft came, and I'm not a big prospect guy. Like, pre-draft, I don't know anyone's name. I'm sorry. I just don't. After the fact, I keep track on like the big ticket names, first round picks. But I don't know when players get drafted if they are good. Like, was that a good pick? I don't know. Let me go find someone who does. But from respected sources, Carolina continued their pattern of drafting well during the Dundon era. Everything's cool. Free agency comes. Now, the first day of free agency, July 1st, is, I don't know, it doesn't have a lot of expectations for Hurricanes fans. It never has. And before this year, I don't know if it ever would have. It's possible that next year we might get a little twinkle in our noses. But basically, there was a handful of free agents who had been on the team the year before, like Jesper Fast and Antti Raanta, Frederik Andersen, who were entering free agency to test the market, and Carolina isn't going to make a splashy signing. This is what everyone's saying prior. This is what I'm saying. Basically, literally every Hurricanes fan is saying, well, I don't have to pay attention to the first day of free agency because Carolina isn't going to do anything stupid exciting. They might re-sign a couple guys that we like. Obviously, they're going to re-sign either Andersen or Raanta, but there will be nothing splashy. Early into free agency, they sign Jesper Fast to a two-year, $2.4 million contract. Lock him down on the stall line. Might as well. His centerman is here for at least another 4 years. And then shortly after that, they sign Antti Raanta to a one-year, $1.5 million contract. And in my head, that was the end of goaltending for the organization, especially since Pyotr Kochetkov doesn't have a home in the American League yet. Something's going to be figured out. That's not the point of this. But I figured that it was going to be a tandem of Antti Raanta and Kochetkov. I would be proven wrong about that when I can get there yet. But I would be proven wrong about that in kind of a shocking way. But when I actually thought about it after the fact, it kind of made sense. But they re-signed Antti Raanta at a free agency after he tested the market. And then the Hurricanes did something a little shocking, more than a little unexpected. They signed free agent defenseman Dmitry Orlov to a two-year, $7.75 million contract. And here's the crazy part, is Dmitry Orlov was on a lot of people's priority lists, I guess, a lot of fans' priority lists of who they want their team to get in the offseason. And $7.75 million per season is not cheap. And that is kind of a splashy free agent signing because that is over fair market value for Orlov. Now, they overpaid him, so the contract could be short-term, even though in the current cap situation, maybe you didn't have to do that, but I wasn't in the negotiating room, so they did, whatever. But no one expected them to sign Dmitry Orlov, who will make our already best NHL defensive core even better. Last year, the Carolina blue line scored more goals than any other blue line in the history of the franchise. I think they scored more goals than any other blue line in the league, too, but don't quote me on that. And now they have Dmitry Orlov, which is just going to make that even better for them. And I wrote about it on CanesHomeIce.com. I don't know if I've plugged that enough yet, but the genius of this contract, you know what? I'm not even going to tell you. There was a genius part of the signing for Dmitry Orlov that I feel like no one's talking about. I wrote about it on the website, and how did we get here? Carolina's blue line. Go read it. There was a key piece to that signing I feel like a lot of people are missing. But the next signing of the day is what proved me wrong. Because after signing Dmitry Orlov, I was like, oh my God, what is going on? Carolina out here pulling out all the stops, I guess. Do I even know this team anymore? Oh, you know, my mind is circling through, like, what are we going to do? I can't believe, what are we about to sign Patrick Kane? Like, what is going on? And then the Hurricanes signed Frederik Andersen on a two-year, $3.4 million deal. And I was shooken. I was shocked. I was flabbergasted. I was surprised. I was taken off guard, whatever you want to say. I did not expect them to re-sign Andersen after signing Raanta. I saw no point in it. They already had two NHL goaltenders. Why do you need to bring Frederik Andersen back? And ultimately, I settled on the fact that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. For the past two seasons, Carolina's goalie rotation has been arguably the best in the National Hockey League. Now, last season, the Boston Bruins had that historical regular season, whatever. But if they hadn't, the Hurricanes would have won the Jennings Trophy for the second season in a row. Why would you get rid of Ronten Anderson when they're already performing so well? Now, Kochekov not having a home in the American League makes this more interesting, but Don Waddell says there's a plan and it's going to work out, so for now, I'm going to trust him, but I reserve the right to dunk on him later. Moving on, I don't know, it was like an hour after the Anderson announcement, the team announced that they signed Michael Bunting on a three-year, $4.5 million per season contract. And again, not someone, this one was not as surprising as Orloff. Honestly, Bunting makes sense in Carolina's system. They needed someone who could throw an extra hit, and Bunting can definitely deliver that, while also scoring 20 goals somewhere in the range of 50 to 60, maybe 70 points, depending on how things work out. And it was just another solid signing on free agency on a day, again, where you don't expect Carolina to be doing a lot. You're expecting Carolina to swoop in and find a budget deal, or maybe to go find a player like they did with Burns last season, where it cost them practically nothing to upgrade, or someone like Pacioretty, where it cost them literally nothing to have an experiment. But Michael Bunting was a good signing. He's going to bring more physicality to the top six, which some people complain about. So, hey, that's a win for you guys. And then this was not on the July 1st, first day of free agency, but I wanted to talk about the other two big signings, even though big definitely deserves an asterisk here. The next one was Brendan Lemieux, 1 year, just above league minimum at $800,000 a year. And if Michael Bunting gives you a little bit more physicality in your top six, Lemieux gives you a lot more somewhere on that fourth line. I'm going to assume he's playing fourth line minutes here. And it almost makes me wonder, between Bunting and Lemieux and Tony DeAngelo, who we'll get to in just a second, if Carolina hasn't decided that they do need a little bit more snarl. You know what I mean? Like, after all those games with Florida, Bobrovsky was good. Don't get me wrong, Bobrovsky was good. But it's not like Carolina's goalies were, you know, greenies. Like, they're still wet behind the ears or whatever. It wasn't Carolina's goaltending that lost them that game. And it wasn't their defensive play that lost them the game. I mean, of course, mistakes would be made every game. But maybe if you have a couple guys out there throwing a few more hits in your zone, you're creating a few more inches here or there. A player can take a shot, maybe an extra screen is created, who knows, whatever. You'll hear Rod say a lot that it just wasn't our night, we didn't get our bounces. But in reality, you create your bounces, you create the time and space for things to bounce the way you want it to, and it almost feels like Carolina went out and got just a little bit grimier to help create, well, I guess I should say, to help convert the scoring opportunities that they're already incredible at making. They lead the league in projected goals. It's just they don't matter, obviously. If they don't go in the net, they don't matter. So what are we going to do to make them go in the net? How about we hit a few more people? How about we create a few more inches for Svechnikov to hit that clap, or for Aho to be able to get into the crease, whatever. And I haven't fleshed out the idea completely yet, but that's what it feels like they're doing. And then, of course, they signed Tony DeAngelo exactly 1 month after the initial trade report came out to a one-year, again, just a one-year contract, although I think that has more to do with because he's still being paid by Philly, because it's only a $1.6 million contract, even though, once again, feels like it could have been lower TDA, could have helped us out a little bit. You want to win a cup, give us some cap space. But I guess the same thing could be said for Anderson, or, I mean, Ronta's 1.5. What do you want from him? Dmitry Orlov, you could have brought it down. Bunting, he's young. He wants his cap. I mean, he wants his bag. No blame here. But that basically ends the major free agent signings. There was a couple more defensive I don't depth defenseman who probably won't play in Carolina's lineup. And Caleb Jones, they re-signed Dylan Coughlin. I wrote about it again on the website if you want to go read it in this very same article where I have the little thing about Olof that people aren't talking about. But there was a grander scheme going on with all these depth defensemen. The chances of all these guys still being in the organization, I don't know, by like game 10 of the season, not even the halfway point, but like game 10 of the season, if all of these depth defensemen are still within the organization, I'll be shocked. I'll eat my hat. I don't know. But there's just no chance that they all make it through the organization because, first of all, there's not enough space for them in Raleigh, even with people riding the bench and hanging out in the press box and all that. So someone's going to have to be waived, and all of them or not waived or exempt, so they're going to have to be waived and go down to an American Hockey League team or be claimed by another NHL organization. And I just don't. I don't know what's going on with that. We're not going to know until training camp, but it's kind of a nothing story until we know what's going on. And again, we won't know until training camp. So it's something to keep your eye on, not something to think about. The other big piece of news, big piece of news. Now, much like Austin Matthews in Toronto, people like to talk about Sebastian Aho not wanting to play in Carolina, not loving it here, wanting out of the organization. And a lot of this stems from him signing the offer sheet in Montreal and whether or not, you know, he says that, oh, I always knew Carolina was going to match. No, he doesn't. There was a chance, at least somewhere in his mind, where he was like, okay, I might become a Montreal Canadian. There was a chance here that is a lot bigger than zero, that I will become a Montreal Canadian. So for, 4 years, people have said, well, once this contract's up, he's not going to be a restricted free agent. He's going to walk. He does not want to be in Carolina. What does Sebastian Aho do with that? He signs an 8-year extension with the Hurricanes, so he now has 9 more years under contract in Carolina. He gets a slight raise at $9.75 million a year. And I mean, this is just a feel-good story of the offseason. Sebastian Aho will be a Carolina Hurricane for a very, very long time. And my favorite part of it is, well, one, there was a very good chance that Sebastian Aho is the captain whenever Jordan Staal retires. It's either going to be him or Jacob Slavin. Right now, betting odds are on Sebastian Aho. But that's not even what jumps to my mind. Sebastian Aho signing this contract, all things going according to plan, knock on wood, he stays healthy. He's on track to be one of, if not the greatest Hurricane in team history. And, you know, there was that asterisk, if I'm saying team history, so I'm not including Hartford here, so bug off Ron Francis. But there is a very good chance that he will score more goals in a Hurricanes uniform than anyone else. He will assist on more goals than anyone else. He'll collect more points than anyone else. He will play more games than anyone else. He'll score more shorthanded goals. Name your thing. There was a very good chance that Sebastian Aho will break that record and be number one. Now, because of how good Andrei Svechnikov is, and a lot of this comes from the faith that Rod Brind'Amour has in it happening, there was a chance that Svechnikov will one day take over those records from Aho. But that's not going to be until after Aho takes them in the first place. So Sebastian Aho will be a Carolina Hurricane for at least 9 more years. So until the early 2030s. And there is a very good chance that he will be one of, if not the greatest Hurricane in the history of the team. Now, there isn't really much left in big offseason news you need to keep a mind on that mattered. Hopefully everything I've talked about mattered in some way, right? Like, I'm not giving you, on September 1st, Rod Brind'Amour stubbed his toe. So, you know, keep that in your mind for when the Rangers come to town in January. None of that happened. But the last huge piece, like franchise milestone to happen, was the Hurricanes officially announced with the Centennial Authority a 20-year lease extension inside of PNC Arena. Now, there was an out in 2035 or 2040. I don't remember off the top of my head. I apologize. But basically, they'll circle back and they'll decide if PNC Arena is still capable of hosting the Hurricanes at that point. And if it's not, the Hurricanes are able to break their lease to go somewhere else. But within the language of the agreement, the two sides have to negotiate and talk about PNC Arena and what the Hurricanes need from PNC Arena first. So that's not, you know, it's not 17 years from now, Dunton's finally going to move it to Houston or Dallas or whatever. Like, that's not what this is. But also as part of this agreement was the ground lease. If you haven't, just go listen to my episode on this, because what this ground lease did, and I talked about it a little bit on the Sorgecast when I appeared on their show like 2 weeks ago now. The ground lease matters a lot more to me than the actual lease for PNC Arena, because the ground lease doesn't expire until 2096. Yeah, because I'll be 98 when it expires. 98 years old when that ground lease expires. Tom Dundon will be long gone. I don't even mean that meanly. Just Tom Dundon will be dead. Like, that's just, honestly, the wide majority of us will be dead in 2098. I'll be shocked if anyone listening to this show right now is still alive. If you are, I don't know, tell people that you still listen. But that basically means the Hurricanes will never leave. It's going to impact the value of this team in ways we don't even know yet. And of course, it will greatly improve the experience of going to a Hurricanes game, of major big league events that can happen in Raleigh, whether it's an all-star game or an outdoor game or whatever randomness happens in the future. Don't expect a draft, but not my point. And that it's so hard because I get so sentimental about stuff like this. But 6 years ago now, when Dundon became majority owner of the team, so many rumors about relocation, such an uncertain future. And now we know this team won't leave. I'm not going to say never, because that's how you get burnt. But the chances of the Hurricanes relocating from Raleigh for financial reasons, basically non-existent at this point. Something would have to go drastically wrong within like 15, 20 years from now. And even still, I don't see it happening. And it's just good to feel. It's good to feel. So the major storyline of this offseason is that the Hurricanes had a splashy free agent signing, which no one expected. They did not get that pure goal score that we all want them and expected them to try to look for, although adding Bunting to the top six is a good call. Adding more physicality to the lineup, especially within the top six with Bunting, good call. Re-signing the captain so he can retire gracefully, which is not what happened with Rod Brindamore, but we're not even going to go there. Great call. Signing Sebastian Aho to an 8-year extension, the future captain of the team, will one day be the greatest player. Great call. There is almost nothing to complain about this offseason that the Hurricanes could control so far. I kind of still expect a trade to happen at some point. I'm not sure who it's going to be, but I'm still expecting a trade to happen before opening night on, I believe, October 11th. So keep that in mind. But excluding the AHL situation, which I don't see directly in Carolina's control, it's been a very good offseason for the Carolina Hurricanes. And now the Hurricanes are seen as the Cup favorite. For the first time ever, ever. The Hurricanes have never been picked as the Cup favorite by the majority of the hockey world. It just hasn't happened. In 06, you hear that at the beginning of the season, everyone thought they would finish last. That's not exactly true, but it's not far off either. No one expected them to win the Cup. And then, you know, there was a couple like, well, what could they do in 07? And then we were garbage. Didn't even make the playoffs. Kind of an embarrassment. There were some expectations in 2009, but not really. And then they underperformed. And then we ignore the Bill Peters era. Paul Maurice gets brought back in. They go to the Eastern Conference Finals, get swept. But there has never been the excitement around the Hurricanes like there is going into this upcoming season. I wrote about it. I don't remember where I wrote about it, but I wrote the phrase that fans in Raleigh, the Carolinas, and the greater hockey world are in the midst of a love affair of a team that fought its way off life support. And honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way. That's where I'm going to end it this week. Thank you so much for listening. As always, please share this show with a friend if you haven't already. Go check out CanesHomeIce.com for more continued reporting that comes out a lot more frequently than the podcast. And of course, until next time, go Canes.